Good afternoon. Today is Thursday, August the 1st, 212th day of the new year. Join us this afternoon, Humboldt County Sheriff, the guy who's in charge of it all, Mike Downey.
Okay.
Yeah, you like
all
that,
right,
huh?
All right.
Yeah. You don't want to talk about jail overcrowding?
No, I think I've talked about that.
You don't want to talk about people being arraigned for shooting and then being found guilty?
No.
Surprise drug bust?
Well, we could talk about some of that.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. What else?
Whatever.
Yeah, right.
Well, we're in the heat of the marijuana season. We've had some fires that we've just been dealing with.
I would think that the two of them together wouldn't be a good combination.
No, not necessarily.
Well, at least not for those who are looking to profit from it.
That's exactly
yeah.
Right.
Okay, we'll talk a little bit about fire, too. Yeah. And whatever else may pop into our fertile minds.
Very good.
We'll do it when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mike Downey. But before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from Will Rogers, sometime between 1879 and 1935. He was only 56 when he died.
Oh, gosh, don't say that.
Well, this was at the turn of last century, so yeah. It was medicine and milk have come into play since
there
then.
There you go.
Indoor plumbing.
There you go.
You're safe.
Yeah, all right.
I think. Quote, I'm not a real movie star. I've still got the same wife I started out with 28 years ago.
Like it.
Ain't that the truth,
yeah,
huh? Boy, oh boy. I suppose there's different pressures and things going on today than there were times back, but when your guys are out there in the hills, do they survive well without their cell phones, without their laptops, without their iPads, without their gizmos? For over 24 hours?
Well, it's all relative based upon where they're at. If they're near a cell tower, those cell phones still work. So, yeah, they are. I mean, and that's probably the frustrating thing for us at times when we have people in the field is that communication piece of those kinds of operations. We go back to, believe it or not, what I used to rely on when I was doing it. Radios. We had to rely on the radios.
The walkie-talkies?
Yeah. So we still have a communication link, but it's not as convenient as the cell phones, the laptops, the tablets, the communication devices we have today. So, I mean, that's really been great for us as far as streamlining things, is being able to communicate so quickly.
I read an article, and I don't recall who the source was, but they were talking about the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids in the 20s, if you deprive them of current technology, they really start to lock up. It's so ingrained.
Right.
And you get a text, boom, you're looking at it. It's not, you know, I guess you and I, you know, is the house on fire? No. Okay, I'll get to it later on. No big deal. But everything is so immediate now that it has to be there. And there's psychological withdrawal.
Yeah.
Because
well, you think about it, even in another application, I have a son who's 21 that's in the Army. He's in Special Forces training, so he'll go out into the field for weeks at a time, and they turn in their cell phones. So we don't hear from him, but we can write him. So we go back to letters, and that's what, you know, when my dad was in the World War II and my brother was in the Army during the Vietnam conflict, I mean, that's how we communicated, with letters. But today, you know, that's so foreign because communication is so instantaneous. But now he has to rely on those letters because that's all they got, you know.
Dad kind of feels comfortable that way, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
When your guys are out and they're running around, how much has technology really helped law enforcement over?
Greatly.
Say 25 years.
Greatly. You know, I look at some of the things we used to do when I did overflights. We would have to take photos of the suspected location. We'd have to get a road system to go in there. We'd have to be able to articulate how to get to this place where we're going to serve a warrant. Well, today, with GPS technology and the ability to call things in, we can click in a location on with a GPS coordinate, and it's spot on. We know that will bring us right back to the exact place that we saw the contraband before. So, I mean, that, you know, technology has been a boom for us in that regard. Everything is quicker. We can, prepare our search warrant affidavits quicker. We can do them in the field. We can do a lot of the paperwork we had to do before. We can upload it and send it electronically. So, in a field application with cell phones, it's great. I can recall 20 years ago when the cell phones first came out, we lugged this heavy bag phone into the field.
The analog, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and it was heavy, and we logged it in there. But it was great technology. We could use it. You know, it was instantaneous at that time. Well, today, you know, you can fit a cell phone in your shoe practically if you had to, with your foot in it. So it's unbelievable.
It's a little bit different. What about things like information retrieval and things of that nature? You mentioned GPS, but obviously there's more information other than just latitude and longitude. Mm-hmm. When you're up in that kind of a situation, are you accessing a whole bunch of information?
Sure. You know, information on people, places, past contacts with law enforcement. There's all kinds of things that we're able to utilize and to get information on with having that, you know, having that availability, that technology. Technology has been unbelievable in that regard.
What about in the office? You know, records keeping and retrieval.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, do you sometimes scratch your head and wonder how was it done prior to this?
Yes. You know, the file systems are gone. I mean, we still keep hard copies of certain documents, and we still back things up with hard copies where we have to. But everything is computerized. It's easy to research, easy to look at. I remember 10 years ago, we were having trouble with our record management system, and I went to our record supervisor and said, I need some data on crimes being committed in this area. Well, our system doesn't allow us to do that, but we're able to upgrade that system to the point where we can do that. We can retrieve data much quicker, and it's to reinforce the reason we need this or don't need that type of thing.
Well, it's always great fun, too, when you have a power outage.
Yeah.
Just kind of brings you back to zero and lets you know how reliant things are sometimes.
Right.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:19.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. Mark the dates August 14th through the 25th for the 117th annual Humboldt County Fair in Ferndale. Beginning opening day, there'll be 8 days of fast horse racing. Competing beef and dairy cattle, goats, poultry, sheep, and swine will be on display and judged. The flower pavilion will be filled with beautiful plants grown by county gardeners. The art pavilion will have many delights for the eye. And enjoy the judged exhibits of locally made items, from baked goods to hand-spun yarn, with much in between, such as decorated potatoes, scarecrows, quilts, rugs, and home brews. There'll be plenty to eat and drink, so you can treat yourself to corn dogs and cotton candy. The commercial exhibits building will feature fascinating products. And of course, there's the Ferris wheel and other rides the kids will want to try. For hours and information, call 786-9511. That's 786-9511. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people, places, and things that makes us a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time, 3:24. We're back to Talk Rush Shop this afternoon with Mike Downey. We were just talking about, in fact, Rush's 25th was today. So, yay. We're at 31, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know if that means that I just don't have the talent that he did. But well, I've got more stick-to-itiveness.
This is on loan from God, right?
Yeah. I'm not sure. I think I might have an expired card. I'm not sure. Mike, some of the different challenges that are out there, we talked a little bit about technology, how it helps. What about some of these things that you're running into now, either law that has changed and has made it more challenging for law enforcement, technology that the bad guys have a hold of also? It's not something just the badges are able to purchase. The other guys are able to as well. Has that have those things kind of leveled the playing field out? Any advantage you might have gotten from the technology? Is it now just kind of a balancing act?
Yeah, we learned to adapt. You know, I mean, on both sides, we learned to adapt. I can remember saying that 25 years ago when I was doing marijuana raiding and stuff like that. As we became more efficient as our job, the other side had to adapt to that. And in the same regard, we had to adapt to those changes also. The law, you know, it's problematic. It has changed as society has relaxed their views on marijuana laws. And you may see, I don't know if we'll see it in my lifetime, or especially in my lifetime in law enforcement, whether we'll see federal legalization of certain drugs or not. But I mean, that is probably something that is coming about as laws become more and more diluted along those lines.
Well, what about like DUI? I was in about the mid-80s, MAD came raging through, and that was the big thing, and you didn't even want to look funny across the street, or somebody was going to be coming after you. Laws have changed, societal norms have changed in certain segments of society.
Right.
But you don't hear that's the big whoop-de-whooplet that it was. Not that it's any less serious.
But I think what you'll find is because of the ground that was gained during those times and bringing it to the forefront of how serious of an issue it is, that has remained as a serious issue. It's just not as publicized or as out front as it was before. But law enforcement is still aggressively seeks out those that are violating the law in those regards. And I think the punishments you'll find being meted out by the courts are still fairly stiff. You know, I mean, first-time offenses, even second-time offenses are more financially burdensome on the violator. But as time goes on, you know, they will still see jail and prison time. So I think you'll find that society has accepted a more stringent stance on that type of thing, and it is stuck because of that.
What about domestic abuse? I would have thought that would have been, I mean, if you step back, you're looking into the petri dish.
Mm-hmm.
I would have thought that domestic abuse would have been, whether it's child endangerment or child abuse or spousal, would have been much more than DUI because of the emotional components that are there and the multi-generational impacts that something like that has. Do we just not hear about it as much? Or is it something that just is kind of one of those things that isn't brought to the forefront?
Well, I think a lot of it's educational, too. I think there's more psychological help available for those that are either prone to it or have been involved in it. Domestic violence 30 years ago or 28 years ago when I first became involved in law enforcement, when I was working down south out of the San Diego area, I can remember going to a location where there had been signs of minor abuse, and it was common practice, and that's the way the law prescribed. Okay, why don't you go to your mother's for tonight? You stay here, have a cooling off period, and that's the way things were handled. Well, then
this is in the mid-80s.
Yes, early to mid-80s. I mean, that's the way those things were handled then. And before that, it was probably not even considered as a crime. Well, you know, people became involved. Criminal statutes were put in place, rightly so. And now there's a voice for the victims that didn't have a voice then. And you know, domestic abuse is domestic violence is something that is dealt with, I think, pretty effectively most of the time, not always. I mean, there's always room for improvement.
Is there another type of activity, criminal activity, that is right now isn't getting the proper attention from your perspective?
Well, there probably is. You know, we have a lot of thefts and burglaries that happen because they're so commonplace that a lot of times things are pled out and dealt with to clear the backlog. You know, I talked to you earlier off the air about environmental issues and some of the things we're seeing in the field today. There seems to be a resurgence of interest in doing something about those issues to try and ward off the possible injurious ramifications from these environmental issues to people, you know, everyday people that are using our resources here. So, you know, those things are definitely becoming more and more prevalent than they had been in the past.
It makes it interesting, I suppose, and more challenging when you're doing your recruiting for your staff. Is there nuances? Do you look for some of these areas, either for history, sympathies, or perhaps even an over-aggressiveness in chasing these kinds of activities down?
Well, you know, to become involved in law enforcement at the level of a deputy sheriff, police officer, or a correctional officer, you know, there is a long background process they have to go through, and there is a psychological evaluation that they have to go through. And we do lose people through that evaluation. If they don't meet a certain criteria, then they're disqualified. So that is looked at and scrutinized. So I think the background process is a good process. Is it foolproof? No. I mean, nothing is. But I think it's a good judge of who we're having coming into the profession.
KINS News and Information Time is 3:30.
Choosing new furniture for your home can be a challenge. Will the colors match? Will the fabrics go well? Will it be comfortable? And will it last? Solve these questions with a visit to Vern's Furniture. Vern's Furniture Consultants have the knowledge to put the right room together for you, whether it's the living room, bedroom, dining room, or laundry room. Vern's has what you're looking for. Free delivery and so much more. Vern's Furniture in downtown Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Humboldt County Sheriff Mike Downey. Mike, some of the different challenges that are out there. I know this is your guys' patrol season out in the boondocks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess it's a little. I don't know if it's early or what's going on, but the trees are starting to turn color, and this is getting me frustrated.
Right.
Yeah.
I can't help you with the weather.
Yeah, I understand. But if it's happening there with our ornamental trees, I would think that a bunch of things are going on. Has harvest season moved up?
No.
To August or September? Is it still pretty much late September or October?
Yeah,
or
you're looking, you know, end of August, September is when you see your heavier harvest time going on.
So as you're going, running around, checking things out, are you starting to see any changes this year? Is this year the same as last year was? Are you seeing bigger? Or are you seeing more frequency?
Well, I think people are being a lot more creative with the way that they're cultivating their crops too. I was out July 3rd with our marijuana guys, and I spent the whole day in the field with them, and we ran into a place where plants were being pushed in a greenhouse situation, and they were darn near ready to harvest. And it's just the way that they're able to deprive the sunlight and modify the plant through other means and being able to.
This was out in the woods.
It was out in the countryside, but they had put up these greenhouses, so they were able to actually get them going sooner, and being able to control their environment to the point that they're pushing the plant along to come to maturity earlier.
Estelle Fennell was in last show, the show before, she was talking about the water diversion.
Mm-hmm.
That all of a
big
sudden,
issue.
This thing seems to be a big, ripping, hairy deal, where 2 or 3 years ago it wasn't. Is it the amount of growers that are diverting? Is it the recognition that diversion is happening? Is it the fact that the fish are getting more and more and more attention, so that the water not being there is impacting the fisheries? Why all of a sudden are we looking at this thing?
Combination of all those plus the fact that we're in a drought year. You know, we just don't have the water this year that we've had in the past. I was talking to somebody today, said they have this year-round creek on their property, and they showed me a picture of it during the wintertime, and it's rushing. You know, obviously there was some rain, and they said the first time they ever seen where it had actually dried up. So we have a lack of water in the whole system throughout. You know, rivers that were normally, you know, 2 or 3 times as large as they are now, or at least half as much, are drying, you know, getting to the point where the flows are down in the September, October levels here in end of July. So all that surely contributes to that. You know, the other thing too is many of the folks that live on some of these watersheds that have been there all their lives or their adult lives are actually working together, and they've come up with rules regarding their watershed. Well, they'll stop pulling out of the watershed at a certain time of the year because of the low level. So the idea is up to that time they're storing as much water as they can so they can make it through those times. And they'll have an agreement on such and such a date based upon the water flow, we're no longer going to draw out of the watershed. But if they have someone on that watershed who's not playing by the rules, we'll continue to draw out of it. I mean, there are hundreds of thousands of gallons being pumped out of some of these watersheds on a daily basis. And you see that's reflected in the rivers and the tributaries and all that that we have today. And we have the increase in the algae bloom. All those things are choking those rivers.
So what about the creeks and some of the smaller tributaries or out in the hills where you've talked in the past about the flyovers and seeing, you know, what looks like tobacco fields,
yeah,
the plantations.
Yeah.
Are these folks, are they sinking wells? Are they buying water tanks and filling them up and then draining off those?
Well,
are they dropping it in the creeks and the rivers? Where are they getting the moisture?
Well, you know, that's an interesting point. And in fact, in the last couple of weeks, I had an inquiry from Redway the other day. Oh, about 2 weeks ago, I was talking to the Rotary, I believe, down there. And someone talked to me off later on, was saying, we have a feeling that someone's coming into Redway at night and opening up the fire hydrant and filling their water truck with water and taking it to their grow site, actually stealing water.
Then, from a fire hydrant?
Yeah. And about a week ago, I actually got a call from a supervisor who said that one of the community's water tanks had gone dry, and they checked. There was no obvious leaks. There was nowhere that the water was coming out. They theorized, based upon what the neighborhoods are saying, people were coming in the middle of the night with water trucks, stealing water, taking it back to their, I'm assuming, back to their grow sites, so they have water to water them the next day. So it's becoming a problem. Now we have water theft going on, too, to add to the issue we're already having.
Well, maybe Carol in the water district can figure out some kind of a deal there.
So what they're doing then they contact other water districts and say, can we get some water from you to fill our tanks so at least our people and live in this community can have water to flush their toilets or whatever they're doing. You know, it's becoming a problem.
But then if
it's
getting pulled down at nighttime.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh. So, you know, so then there's the added expectation of law enforcement. Well, can you give us extra patrol to watch these fire hydrants? I don't have the resources to watch the fire hydrants and to see if someone's coming at night. The best thing is if people are hearing things in the middle of the night, give us a call and we'll come check it out. It takes a long time to fill a water truck.
That's right. I would think the old-fashioned neighborhood watch, I would think, would be something, you know, put a motion light on out there and up high enough so it doesn't get shot out.
Right.
That would probably take care of it pretty quickly.
Yeah, but that's becoming more and more of a problem, especially this year over other years.
I hadn't even thought about fire hydrants.
Yeah. They pull right up to them and drain the tanks.
Wow. Yeah, and like you said, it's not a small rig.
No,
if you're
going to
do it, you're going to have a pretty big vehicle.
Right.
So that obviously is a new trend. What about some of the other stuff? Typically we'll hear about the diesels and spill, you know, the generators and that kind of thing. Are you seeing residual from the plastics being left in the woods or, you know, past grows or any of that kind of stuff, or is that really still not enough to worry about?
Oh, it's worth worrying about. There's historical residue, if you want to call it that, from, you know, 30 years ago that's still out there in the environment, and it's being added to, you know, every year a little bit more. Some of the estimates is there's enough black pipe in Humboldt County to go around the earth a couple of times. That's probably not so far off. But there's a lot of garbage that's in our environment that has been left there year after year. And these studies I know we've talked about in the past of these rodenticides and insecticides that have been left in the environment after the grower, usually these big industrial drug trafficking organization type growers come through.
International criminal guys.
Yeah, and they leave. They'll leave behind all the residual stuff. And that's what really hurts, especially if animals get into it, break it open, and you have it exposed to the soils. They ingest it. Another carnivore comes along and ingests that animal. So then it gets into the whole ecosystem of the forest, and it's a real issue.
When you consider how the marijuana industry has changed over the years, is there any way to get out the international criminal cartels? Because I would think, yeah, if all of a sudden you're talking to somebody who just had a customer who came through with a Russian accent, we don't seem to be a popular place for Russian immigration.
Yeah.
Yeah, that there would be some of those types of triggers. Is because the money's so much right now, right, or the fear of retribution is so high that nobody's talking about some of those relatively easy red flags to pick up?
Well, we get calls on those types of things from time to time. I think the biggest problem we're having today is the fact there's confusion between state and federal law. Well, it's not confusion. It's clearly drawn lines. You know, the state says you can regulate or you can have medical marijuana. Counties want to regulate that medical marijuana. The feds come in and say you can't regulate medical marijuana because it's illegal. So then that means we can't regulate anything. There's no
consistency.
Way. Yeah, there's no consistency.
KINS, News and Information Time, 3:45. We'll be back with more from Mike Downey.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:48. Mike, the fires that are going on, is that concern right now for you and for the troops?
Well, not right at this moment. It appears as though New Orleans, what they call the dance fire, I was out there yesterday and stopped in at the Incident Command Center, both in Hoopa and out in Orleans, and very little smoke. Well, I shouldn't say little smoke. There was not the heavy smoke that they experienced the last 2 days. The fire pretty much stopped the run. I think they had it. I think by today it's probably fully contained. I think it'll be doing mop-up from here on out. But then there's been some more fires out towards Siskiyou County, so that strike team will probably stay in the area and move up to that location. But it was a pretty scary situation on Monday and Tuesday, especially Monday, the way that fire ran through the edge of town and actually burned a residence and some outbuildings. So it was problematic. We had they were asking for anybody they could get. We sent like 6 or 7 deputies out there right away to help with evacuations, and it was a lot of pandemonium.
I would think
confusion.
That's not something you can really drill in a small rural. You know, that's a tough one. But so far so good.
Well, when you see flames, you know, shooting up alongside the road, you know, 30, 40 feet in the air, that's pretty scary.
I'll just let you take the pictures, send them to me next week, you know, after it's done.
Yeah, right.
I'm out.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Thanks for coming by.
You bet. It was good. Thank you.
Keep staying active, huh?
Yeah, you bet. Yeah. All right.
We've been Talking Shop this afternoon with Mike Downey. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Until then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.